From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when the Pew Research Center conducted a little experiment, a test of sorts. Pew wanted to know whether younger American adults are better or worse than older Americans at understanding the difference between fact and opinion. An earlier study by the American Press Institute found that older Americans are more confident than younger ones in their ability to discern fact from opinion. In other words, the older we get, the more we think that, well, kids or young adults are just kind of idiots, and we can tell the basic facts better than they can. We can sniff out the differences between factual information and analysis the older we get. Well, this is where it gets pretty good then. Pew found that Americans over the age of 50 are worse than younger people at discerning facts from opinions. A lot worse. It's pretty bad. The first takeaway is that maybe we should stop lecturing younger adults for being naive or poorly educated. And the next is that we've got real work to do at helping Americans understand fact from opinion. And our panel this hour is going to, well, we're all going to take the quiz, and listeners, you are too. And we're going to talk about some of the differences and how we sort of consume media. I think that's a big question here. How broad is your base of consuming media? If it's narrower, research indicates that you're not going to do as good a job at discerning fact from opinion. So there's a lot to talk about here. And hello to all of our guests. Ray Martino is a lecturer in the School of Management at Nazareth College and former partner at Martino Flynn. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Quenisha Anye, who is an expat soon to be?
Yes.
You're out of here?
I am out of here.
Is it because of this? Is it because this country is just very smart?
I've been traveling the world for a while, and I came back, and I'm like, how? How did this happen? Get me out of here before I'm 50 and I'm one of these people, right?
You're moving. Where are you moving?
I'll be going to London with my wonderful wife, Finesse.
All right. So you and your wife going to London very soon here?
Yeah, she's British. She's a British-born Nigerian, so she's already there. She's waiting for me.
Congratulations.
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Well, it's nice having you, Quenisha. Brad Ford is a senior equity compensation analyst at Constellation Brands. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Zeynep Soysal is an assistant professor in philosophy at the University of Rochester. Zeynep, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to read the actual questions, and there are 10 of them. And we are not going to tell you before we get to the meat of it, which of these statements are facts, which of these statements are opinion statements. And I'm not going to tell you the distribution, if it's even. I'm just going to read the 10, and then we're going to talk about it. So, 10 statements. In your mind, can you tell whether this is an opinion statement or a factual statement? Here we go. Abortion should be legal in most cases. ISIS lost a significant portion of its territory in Iraq and Syria in 2017. Healthcare costs per person in the United States are the highest in the developed world. Government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. Number 5, increasing the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour is essential for the health of the U.S. economy. Number 6, democracy is the greatest form of government. Number 7, President Barack Obama was born in the United States. Number 8, immigrants who are in the United States illegally are a very big problem for the country today. Number 9, immigrants who are in the United States illegally have some rights under the Constitution. And number 10, spending on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid make up the largest portion of the U.S. federal budget. 10 statements. Can you tell which of those were facts and opinions? Here's the amazing thing. So Pew Research broke it down by two age groups, 18 to 49 years old and over the age of 50, so 50 plus. There is not a single question here in which the 50 plus did better. So it was either a tie or the 18 to 49 group did significantly better. Before we reveal the answers, let's go around the table and ask if you're surprised by that. Ray, are you surprised by that?
Well, first of all, I'm 69 years old and I'm embarrassed. And I'm the oldest person in this room, but I'm not surprised. I teach students at Nazareth College that range in age from 18 to 40. I gave the test last week to 20 of my students, and they all got 100%, which is way higher than the sample did in any age group.
You're a good professor.
Well, it must be, right. I do, but I'm not surprised. I'm really, the thing that surprised me most of all is how poorly every cohort did. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, we're going to go question by question, okay. and there are some that you really do blow you away that people can be that far off. But overall, though, you're not surprised.
No,
Okay. Quenisha.
Yeah. I think I wasn't surprised overall, but there were certain questions that I was, I guess if you, yeah, I was a little bit surprised that they wouldn't know this, but I think that's where it's like you want these things to be true, right? And so you oftentimes we go err on the side of emotion rather than fact. And so also when you read the actual study or read the write-up around the study, it becomes clear how these minds were conditioned to not be able to tell the difference, right? And to not be able to objectively say, even though I want this to be true, this is an opinion, this is not a fact. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zeynep?
Well, I'm not surprised either, but for slightly different reasons.
And get right on that microphone. So, go ahead. So, yeah.
Slightly different reasons, because I think there's fundamentally a deep problem with the distinction between facts and opinions. So I think in some ways the results of the survey show that there's a problem with the distinction itself. So I can say more about this.
What do you mean by that?
So I think that so when I say that the distinction is confused, I think that it conflates together many different distinctions. So there are many different distinctions that are put together in the same category. And when you look at the things that people in general put in the category of opinions, it's a very mixed bunch of things. So for instance, you might say certain moral statements are typically put in the category of opinion. Moral statements like, I mean, I don't want to reveal the test examples, but abortion should be legal. That's, you know, that should be put in the category of opinion statements. But not all opinion statements, or not all statements that are put in the opinion category, are moral. Some of them just result from, for instance, vagueness in language. So when you look at this, democracy is the greatest form of government. Great for whom? Right. Great in what sense? So it seems like that statement, it's not even clear what it's stating. It's not even clear that it's stating something that's either true or false. Okay, but not all opinion statements are like that. They're not all vague. Some of them are moral. Some of them are perfectly clear. Abortion should be legal. There's no vagueness in that. And in fact, you might think there is a truth of the matter. And there are many other distinctions like this that are confused, conflated together. So one more, for instance, is matters of taste. So people usually put statements that seem to be matters of taste into the category of opinion. And for instance, chocolate tastes better than ice cream. They would put that in the opinion category. But not every statement that's put in the opinion category is a statement that's a matter of taste. After all, moral statements, you would think, are not matters of taste. And some of them are just vague, again, as I said. So there are many different distinctions that are put together, and it can be hard for people to know how to make this distinction. Now, one interesting thing about the survey, if I may just say a bit more about this, they actually had a rule. So they explained what they mean by this distinction between fact and opinion. They didn't give this to the participants. That's important to note. But their rule was something like this. They said, a factual statement is a statement that can be proved or disproved by objective evidence, while an opinion statement is a statement that is based on the values and beliefs of the journalist or the source making the statement and cannot be proved or disproved based on objective evidence. Now, there are problems with this rule, too. And the problems are at least two. One is there's a problem with the notion of proof. I think that's too demanding of a notion. And the second is that this rule that they themselves give don't actually generate the examples of factual or opinion statements that they are supposed to generate. So, for instance, I mean, just to look at, well, first maybe one thing about proof. So the notion of proof is very demanding. In general, if you have a proof of something, it means that cannot be doubted. So President Obama was born in the U.S. We all know that
That's false. Oh, yeah. is that right?
He was born.
He was. Okay.
So there's really super strong evidence, right? We all know the evidence.
But it's someone did send people there, and they figured something else out, and, like, information was coming,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But there is no proof of it. I mean, a proof is something almost, you know, you cannot doubt it anymore. Like, right. I know there is a microphone in front of me right now. Why? There's evidence for it. I see it. I can't prove that there's a microphone in front of me. So anyway, so that notion is a bit.
This is so great having a philosophy.
I'm yes. so sorry.
Awesome. Yeah, we're all yes.
So just, okay, so let's give up the notion of proof. And a more charitable way of interpreting, I think, what they were getting at is a different distinction, a distinction between statements for which there's good evidence.
Yes.
And statements for which there isn't good evidence.
Do you think the survey was well constructed then?
No, because
agree with that.
The things that they actually put in the opinion statements are things that for which there could be evidence or there could be evidence for or against.
For example, if you want to take the opinion statement, and it is an opinion statement,
yes.
Democracy is the greatest form of government. Somebody could argue, well, I said that's a fact because if we look at poverty, if we look at health rates, all kinds of, you know, wealth markers, et cetera, crime rates, that we could objectively come up with some sort of a formula.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So they might be able to try to make an argument based on factual basis.
Exactly. So that would be one example. Or you might, you know, because that's a bit vague, you know, greatest, again, you have to make it more precise first. But here's another one. The governments are always wasteful, I think. Government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. That seems like there's clearly you can look for evidence for or against this claim. I mean, after all, if the claim is government is almost always wasteful, then check all the governments. Right. Are they wasteful? How do they manage their resources? And, you know, you can measure this. It's hard, right? Not everything is easy to find out, but it could be found out. And, you know, there are more general, you know, considerations you might bring to bear. Governments are incredibly complicated organizations. So presumably, you might think maybe that's itself a reason to think they're going to be wasteful, et cetera.
So this is amazing. Having just watched and getting caught up to speed on the show The Good Place.
Oh, it's so good.
This is like having Chidi Anagonye on the show today. This is like, do you watch the show?
Yeah, I did.
This is like having Chidi. I mean, is a great character. But, you know, this whole, I don't know, is it a fact, is it an opinion? You're going to waffle on it all day here. But actually, I joke, and philosophically, there's really good reason for that. Yeah.
And I think there's just a good reason also practically, not just philosophically. The fact-opinion distinction, I think, is used in a possibly harmful way. So when you say of something, oh, that's just an opinion, what you're doing is you're refusing to really consider the question any further. You're refusing to take in more evidence. You just say, okay, that's just your opinion, and let's end it at that.
All right, so in a moment, I'm going to try to push back a little bit on the philosophy professor, because I think generally the survey was fair, but I think that she's making some important points on where we need to be careful here. But let me get Brad's take on what you saw, the results here in the survey itself. Go ahead.
Yeah, to start off, I wasn't too fond of the title of the article. I think that's a little bit of a generalization of, you know, two different generations. I think that's a bit of a stretch based off of, you know, the data that was collected. I would like to know more demographics of who's taking the survey, what's their occupation, where are they from, what are their interests. I would like to know a little more of that data before I make, you know, this opinion myself on the results. But as far as being surprised or not surprised, I was a little of both. The younger people, the reason why I would be, you know, not a surprise that they did better would be either if they're politically interested or if they have the digital savviness of how they consume media and how they consume this information, or if they see it, or how, you know, how often they see it, or the quantity. I could see that playing a factor in, you know, to them being able to provide fact rather than opinion, and make a decision off that. But I would also, on the other side, a little surprised that younger generation does have a little more interest in either these politically based questions.
Really?
I think the interesting correlation that was in the data was that the older cohort, people my age, were affected by television news disproportionately. And you can see that it's easy for people who rely on television news to be misinformed.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
To be tribalized.
Yeah, I think it's also almost unfair to call it news at a point. Right?
Well, that's true.
Like when we don't
that's
make the
true.
Distinction between this is an opinion
right.
show,
right.
this is a news show, like right. that is done by people who have actually done the research, as opposed to people who have formed opinions and are
right.
their entire purpose is to shape your opinion.
Right.
Right.
It's so true. And I think that point, I'm so glad you're raising that point, because the research is getting pretty clear. There's and it's happening in various ways here. But if our media consumption is basically just cable news, we're not very well informed.
Right. Right.
And that point is so true. If you're watching cable news a lot, you're going to start to think that your worldview is based on a fact and not opinion. And so as much as Zanip is making really important points, I think there are some questions that are unimpeachably fair and there are some that are a little more gray. But for example, when you see a question like spending on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid make up the largest portion of the U.S. federal budget, and barely over half, 51% of people over the age of 50 understand that that's a factual statement,
right.
whereas 63% of people 18 to 49 understand that's a factual statement. That's crazy to me that there can be a disparity at all. And that to me is one of the unimpeachable questions. That's just a numbers question. The spending on the federal budget, is that fair?
You agree? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, so that's more unimpeachable. But then you start thinking, well, who are the people who think, well, that's just an opinion? Well, maybe it's the people who keep hearing that, you know, right. Well, we could cut those things and it won't hurt us that much. Right. It's not that big of a deal.
And then those are the same people who then vote against their own interests because they look at a thing that they've worked for their entire lives as a giveaway mm-hmm. or, you know, the government is taking care of you as opposed to, well, actually, you know, this person that you've watched every night has convinced you that all the years of you working and the labor that you have put in is not, you don't deserve anything on the other side of that. That would be the government giving you something, mm-hmm. you know, and that's where it's like, okay, on Facebook, they're now trying. As much as I think Facebook is very evil, they're now trying to label different articles as opinion or news or things. That same distinction, I think, should happen on your MSNBC or Fox. You know, of course, I'm probably watch more MSNBC than Fox. I watch Fox when I'm very angry and I need to laugh. But there, even on the left, it's clear to me there are some shows I just can't watch because they're too left. They're too opinionated. They're not, you know, they're not. It's this person has come to this conclusion and they spend an hour trying to convince you of that. And my ability to see that from this study, I think what they're saying is that an older person wouldn't be able to watch that same show or their show of their flavor and say, okay, I consume this, but this is this person trying to convince me of this thing.
Right. This person's right, and this person sees reality as right. That's the truth.
Well, if I could speak for my cohort, in the 60s, you know, I grew up, I was born in 1949. We got our first television set in 1951. And you got your news in the 50s and 60s. Good part of the 70s from television, and there were three outlets, and they all said covered basically the same news. And you thought that Walter Cronkite was God. Hmm. If he said something, it was true. You didn't question it. Then Ronald Reagan deregulated the FCC. He had the Fairness Doctrine repealed, so then that led to talk radio. Rush Limbaugh became famous. It was okay to be biased.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be fair. There was no Fairness Doctrine any longer. So AM radio, except for this outlet here, took advantage of that and sort of put crazy people on that where people were starting to quote them, et cetera. Then in the 90s, cable news proliferated with Fox and MSNBC. So now my generation, we grew up believing television news and certainly
that's
print.
True. Yeah.
Now it's hard to change your media habits. And young people, they don't watch television news. They don't read print. They hardly listen to the radio.
I wouldn't say we don't watch it as much as I think it's not. We have a broad consumption of media, right?
Right.
It's
much
not.
Broader.
We're not we're not like I love Rachel Maddow. I think she's
right.
amazing,
right.
But I don't think she's God like Walter Cronkite, right?
Right.
You know, so I'll watch some Rachel, I'll do some political, The Hill,
right.
You know, all these different things, and then we'll go on Facebook or Twitter and we will challenge each other.
Right.
And I think that's a big missing piece from like the older right. generations. I think the older generation is pretty passive in their approach. To things.
Yes.
It's they don't want to offend. They don't want to say you're wrong.
Right.
You know, well, let's be fair. Let's be even-handed. And our side would be like, yeah, no, absolutely not. You know, and so you have all these challenges happening. And I think a lot of people, as much as like social media can be very consuming, I think a lot of people have been introduced to information that they wouldn't otherwise have been.
Oh, that's true.
You know, if a Twitter didn't exist, if a Facebook didn't exist. And I think older people kind of unplug from that, right?
Yeah.
You know, they may put pictures of their garden up, but they're not going to challenge someone on race.
But back to media bias, there's a chart online called mediabiaschart.com.
Yep.
If you're familiar with that.
Yep.
And this woman, she's a patent attorney in Denver, I believe, and she, Vanessa Otero, and she developed this website, and she did the content analysis of the major media outlets. She developed algorithms, and now she's got this chart in its fourth iteration that really ranks quality and bias of each media outlet. And I'm happy to tell you that NPR is right at the top.
Yay.
In terms of quality and neutrality. It's right up there with AP and Bloomberg and C-SPAN. But once you get away from that, the bigger audiences on the right and the left are spewing opinion all day.
Yeah.
And they're sitting behind an anchor desk as if they were delivering the news, but they're not. They're giving their opinion. The analysts, so to speak. So,
and now let me go ahead and work through the questions, and I'm going to highlight two for two specific reasons. On the factual side, here is a question in which the 18 to 49-year-old cohort did significantly better than the 50 and over cohort. In fact, this is the question that both sides did the worst. But if you're over the age of 50, 48% understood that what I'm about to read is a factual statement. This is not an opinion. This is a factually based statement. If you're 18 to 49, 60% understood it, but only 48% over the age of 50. Here's the statement. Immigrants who are in the United States illegally have some rights under the Constitution. That's a factual statement.
Yes.
And if you're over the age of 50, you're more likely to think that's just an opinion.
Is it that you think it's an opinion or you don't want it to be true?
I think that's part of it. But I think the point that you've made so well, Quenisha, is that when you consume so much opinion, quote-unquote journalism or talk radio besides this one, or cable news programs at night, cable news especially, you start to think, well, I want this to be true. And, you know, darn it, it is. Mm-hmm. That's just the truth. And I think that you convince yourself, it's a pathological thing, that's the truth. That's the reality.
Right. And then you operate from that premise, right?
Yeah.
And that's where all of your privilege and everything else, you know, all of these things come from that place. And you feel, you lose sight of the fact that this is now a feeling, right? And it feels informed because you're not just, it's not just you and your friends that are saying this. It's your friends are sharing an article from this not journalist on this TV network. And this is what is like true for like your reality. But and then now you're marching and you're petitioning and you're doing all these things that feel tangible and feel real, but at the core of it, still false.
I think another problem with the media today is that they're setting the agenda, and they always have. A professor of mine at Syracuse University, Maxwell McCombs, and in the 60s, actually, before I went to college, he developed the agenda-setting theory. And it's a social scientific theory. There's been over 400 studies similar to this. And it says that the media doesn't necessarily tell you what to think, but they tell you what to think about. So if they're covering the migrant caravan, and you're a 69-year-old conservative male, which I'm not, they think, well, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. We get those troops out there. We can't let these people in. Facts have nothing to do with it.
And then when it falls off the radar, you just
stop talking about it.
Especially like now when you keep hearing about this 24-hour news cycle.
Right.
I feel like if you were kind of aware over the last 3 years, let's say, you started to feel when it got exhausting, like, wait, this is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And now it's literally just the norm. You know, I go on CNN or any of these like sites expecting the world to be on fire every time. Mm-hmm. I expect a new headline and that something terrible has happened, whether it's a mass murder or this person in office has done something insane or someone has been fired or left. Like, you don't go on there not expecting the worst case scenario. And so I think now we have, like you said, with the agenda setting theory, like you assume that when you go there, they're going to tell you something that you want to hear, that is true, and that you are going to act upon because everything is the worst it's ever been. You know, and I don't even know if we're at a point where they're not telling you what to think. I feel like now you have this war of media and they feel like, okay, the left did this or the right did this, we have to stand up. You know, it's very clear when you're watching the news who feels what. As much as they try to use, like, general statements, you know who's a Republican, you know who's a Democrat, you know who they voted for, who they want to win. And I don't think that was always the case when you talk about a Walter Cronkite or plenty of people before now. And I think that we have just gotten to this, like, a really dangerous place.
But let me ask something. And you know, Brad brought up sort of this question on multi-platforms, where you're getting your information from. We know that the older you are, the less diverse your media consumption habits are. But when you are consuming information, whatever the platform, and there is something where the world's on fire, as Quenisha says, do you challenge yourself to find other views? Do you think that's important to the generation of which you belong?
I absolutely do. I was going to jump in and say that, you know, my interest in politics and, you know, this type of information is not very high. So if I want to have an opinion or a fact on something, I don't really just take the first thing that comes at me. I would go out and research and know 100% what this fact is going to be before I say it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see both sides. I want to be able to make an educated decision based on the facts and the data that I'm giving a good, solid opinion.
It's because you're a young whippersnapper.
Also, I think so many people are new into this space. Because politics has almost become ESPN to everyone now, you have so many more people that are like paying attention and learning all this stuff for the first time that slept through history class in high school like me. You know, and like you're learning all of this in real time. And it's like if you take a step back and you look at history, been listening to too many podcasts, basically. I think that's another thing, like, that is a huge tool outside of social media, is because it's a storyline over a long period of time. But if you listen to, like, Rachel Maddow has this new, The Bagman, I think it's called.
Bagman.
And it's like, well, like, history truly does repeat itself, you know? And when you hear about, like, witch hunt or all this language that feels like the first time, I remember being, like, 5 years ago, and I was convinced that terrorist was a new word that was created like in 2001 with the towers, because it's like this was new to me. You know, before that, I wasn't really paying attention. And so there's so much of our language that existed before us but feels very brand new to us. And there's so many people that are coming into the politics of it all and trying to get informed. And I think if they did a wider swath of this, I'm not convinced that people in my age range would absolutely get these right, more so than older people. Mm. I think that older people absolutely would get it wrong. But I feel like I've talked to so many of my friends that are like, did you see when this guy that I don't ever say his name did this to Theresa May? And I'm like, pretty sure that was not her hand at all. But they've seen this video that they're convinced is true. And it was actually him, like, not wanting to.
So you're
to
saying
hold his...
sometimes your peers get duped too?
All the time, I'm saying. I'm like, they're my right. friends on Facebook. They get it wrong all the time. And they equally, well, I won't say equally because now this is an opinion, not a fact. Oftentimes, whether they're on the left or the right, they want to believe this thing that is likely an opinion, right? And even in the comment section, yes, you'll get some people who are saying percentages or quoting history, but most times it's truly they have come to this place of just feeling like this.
Yeah, and I think that's a big theme that we're touching on throughout this hour, and I think that's maybe one of the big takeaways here, is we have created a society where we are so invested in our opinions being right that we start thinking of them like facts. And Zainab, you're nodding at that. Is that a problem? Should we be on guard for that?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I do find it very weird that people have so many opinions about things. So, you know, even after the survey, so they asked people, you know, okay, do you agree or disagree with this? There was no third option. I think it's, you know, we have many other attitudes available to us. We can suspend judgments on some things. If our evidence, if the evidence that we have, if the facts that we have don't strongly support one way or another, we should just suspend judgment, or we should not believe so strongly. Why are people having so many strong opinions and strong feelings? And of course, because they have strong feelings, and because some of these claims are related to identities that they hold, you know, dear, or other emotional issues that, you know, that come to bear on which beliefs they hold. But it's not evidence. It's not. It's very important to adjust your beliefs to your evidence. If you want to have true beliefs, and we all do, whether you're conservative or liberal, we all want to have true beliefs. We should all have true beliefs. That's what's, you know, helpful for getting buy-in in life. And so we should adjust our beliefs to our evidence and not to what we feel like or what we...
But
like
what
more.
Would Thanksgiving dinner be?
Well,
without
yeah.
opinions.
It's gonna be fabulous next week. It's gonna. No, I mean to Zainab's point. I mean, I have to say, I was ready to challenge you on the question of whether democracy is the greatest form of government is an opinion statement or potentially could be categorized factually, and the more I've been thinking about it, the more you're making me doubt, which is what a philosophy professor should probably do.
Yes, that's my job.
Because I do think that doubt is I think we all sort of travel in different circles with too much certainty these days. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree, yeah.
Sure.
And we should be more humble. You know, things are hard. Some of these questions are really hard to answer. Is government efficient? I mean, you know, it's very hard. There are ways of figuring it out, but it's very hard. Maybe it's beyond all of our expertise, I mean, all the experts' expertise.
Well, but then that's a good one to ask you this on. The statement that Pew used there was government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. Mm-hmm. Is that an opinion or a factual statement? If you were taking the survey, you probably would figure out what that they want you to say. Right. That's an opinion statement.
Yeah, but I would have really liked to put it in the factual state category, because it is something that there could be evidence for or against. It's something that seems to have, there's a clear truth value to this. It's either true or false, and we could we could, you know, look at all the governments. It's really hard. I'm not saying this is actually feasible, but it's possible to think of a series of investigations we could do to figure out whether this is true or
false. And
this is
where the context comes in, because I think in the way the modern media is reporting in this country, this is a left-right question. And if you're on the political right, you're more likely to think, well, government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. That's a fact. Yeah. Any government program is wasteful or is intrusive. Right. You know, I can't tell you how many times I see on social media, taxation is theft. Taxation is theft. You know, whereas on the left, you're more likely not to think that government is the savior, but to say that, you know, in an unequal society, supports are appropriate and, you know, sort of remedies for inequality are appropriate. And I think what Pew is trying to do is make sure everyone understands that right now this question on waste and inefficiency is based on mostly opinion. But, you know, Zainab, of course, is giving us a curveball.
Well, I think also that the difficulty with this methodology is if the way in which the questions are stated, they actually say in the instructions that it doesn't matter if it's accurate or not. It's just that it's stated as a fact.
Yeah.
And that, and I think that that, and they claim to, if you look at the methodology, they claim to have tested that. And but I found myself, and I actually got one wrong.
What did you get wrong?
The one about Barack Obama, I thought, well, this is probably opinion. People are going to say it's an opinion. Well,
wait,
no, it is
a fact. Wait.
President Barack Obama was born in the United States. You thought that was an opinion?
Wait.
I thought that, I didn't think it was an opinion, but I thought that people would answer it that way.
Okay,
so, well,
got
wait
it.
A minute. I didn't understand what I was trying to do.
I see.
Gotcha.
You're going like third level on this, Ray.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking too much about it. I'm overthunk it. But the students at Nazareth got it all right. They didn't have a problem with it.
All right, well.
Very smart.
So let me just read the list then. I promised you I would do this. Then what we'll do is we'll get some of your feedback that have come in via email and phone call after our only break of the hour. But what the reason we're here is Pew Research conducted a survey and split the American population in their survey between two age groups, 18 to 49 and 50 and older. And their headline was simple: younger adults are better able than their elders to correctly classify factual and opinion statements that appeal to the left and right. Here are the five factual statements, and there were five and five. Here are the five factual statements. Spending on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid make up the largest portion of the U.S. federal budget. 18 to 49-year-olds got that right 63% of the time. 50-plus, only 51% of the time. Second factual statement. Immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally have some rights under the U.S. Constitution. 18 to 49-year-olds got that right 60% of the time. 50-plus, only 48%. Number three, President Barack Obama was born in the United States. 18 to 49-year-olds got that right 79% of the time. 50-plus, 74% of the time. Fourth factual statement. Healthcare costs per person in the U.S. are the highest in the developed world. 18 to 49-year-olds understood that to be a factually based statement 76% of the time, 50-plus, 75%. And ISIS lost a significant portion of its territory in Iraq and Syria in 2017. 18 to 49-year-olds got that right 68% of the time, 50-plus, also 68% of the time. That was the question, Zainab, that I thought was the most poorly worded, because the word significant is pretty subjective.
Right. I figured there would be more numbers in this, and it was very loose language, I felt.
But at the same time, Pew's probably going to come back and say, they lost the vast majority of their territory. There's no way to say that's not significant.
Right.
Okay, five opinion statements. Democracy is the greatest form of government. 18 to 49-year-olds recognize that as an opinion statement correctly 76% of the time, 50-plus, only 61%. Immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally are a very big problem in the country today. 18 to 49-year-olds recognize that correctly as an opinion statement 74% of the time, 50-plus, only 61%. Third opinion statement, government is almost always wasteful and inefficient. 18 to 49-year-olds identified that correctly 77% of the time, 50-plus, only 65%. Fourth opinion statement, abortion should be legal in most cases. 18 to 49-year-olds recognize that as an opinion 82% of the time, 50-plus, 78% of the time. And finally, opinion statement number five, increasing the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour is essential for the health of the U.S. economy. Both groups got that correct 73% of the time. So there you are. You're up to speed. We're going to get our only break of the hour. We'll take your phone calls, get your emails as well. We're talking about why 18 to 49-year-olds did better on this survey, whether the survey was valid, and whether anything is true, apparently. That's what we're... We'll reintroduce the panel or really making us think next after the break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, we sit down with Heath Phillips, is a military sexual assault survivor who's been sharing his powerful story, surviving sexual assault in our first hour. Then second hour, we're talking about philanthropy and millennials and their efforts to try to pool resources, whether it's companies or individuals. We'll talk about the most effective ways to engage in philanthropy. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. As we debate what is factually based statements and what is opinion based statements, we can be certain that Stan Lee did pass away at the age of 95, and yet several newspapers reported as Spike Lee dying at the age of 95, and that
close.
Was neither factual nor opinion. That was fake news. Spike Lee has probably, will admit that the New York Knicks have aged him a lot, but it was Stan Lee who died. Our guests in studio, Zeynep Soysol is an assistant professor of philosophy at the University of Rochester. Ray Martino, lecturer in the School of Management at Nazareth College and former partner at Martino Flynn. Quenisha Anye is an expat soon headed to London after just getting married. When did you get married?
Like 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. And Brad Ford is a senior equity compensation analyst at Constellation Brands. I want to get Jane on the phone first. Jane, go ahead.
First of all, there's just so much there that you're reading off. I noticed that it's a lot of the questions seem to be so black and white, and I wanted more nuance on it to say yes or no. But I want to take something specific that you brought up about immigrants. Do they have constitutional rights? Specifically, that's what the question was.
The statement, and again, the question is this a factually based statement or an opinion statement? And it doesn't even mean that the fact assertion is true or not, but is it a statement based? And the statement was immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally have some rights under the Constitution.
And people said yes or no to that.
There was a significant amount of 50 plus who thought that was an opinion based statement.
Oh well, so it doesn't matter what my answer might be. I know there was some controversy. I remember when Diane Rehm was on, that this issue was discussed quite a bit, and she said that the law had changed, just to get into maybe what a person's frame of reference might be answering that, and that at one time it was that you could bring yourselves and your nuclear family with you, and that somewhere along the line it got changed to you can pretty much bring anybody, extended family, you know, so that we have a great many more immigrants than was anticipated. And she was, trying to explain that and how there may be different emotional reactions to the immigrants coming in, seeming to be a great deal more than was anticipated. So it's your frame of reference and what other information you have. But I don't know if I'm doing a very good job of this. But
you are.
But there are nuances, and I do want to mention this one thing. Somebody mentioned wording, and I've noticed that. I remember you're saying you had not been aware of redlining back in the day.
That's right. I grew up with very little information on that.
And that has a very negative context to it. And I noticed that some of the same types of policy. Are similar to the gentrification, and that's gotten a bad name now. And I've noticed lately I don't hear gentrification anymore. I hear urbanization. And it's as though they're running from the bad, from the redlining. They're not going to call it that now. They can't call it. And so the wording is very important because you're being manipulated, in my opinion, most likely, that wording. What was it before? What was it 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Or what is it now? Okay, thank you very much.
Jane, that's a very important point, and I'm going to turn to the philosophy professor in a moment for just a touch on the way things are worded. But you're absolutely right. And as I do that, I'm going to read an email from Tim, who's kind of building on what Jane's saying, and I want to make sure we understand exactly what Pew did here. Tim writes, distinguishing opinions from facts isn't always straightforward when lies or ignorance about the facts are thrown in the mix. For example, when Trump says something like, I am the first president to ever blank, that's not his opinion, it's just usually a lie or ignorance about the facts. If it were true, it would be a fact. If it's not true, it's not his opinion, it's just an ignorance or a lie. Tim, that number one, that's exactly right. Number two, Tim, I think what Pew wanted to do here was ask whether when we debate issues, do we understand if we're actually debating discernible facts that are checkable or an opinion? And too often we think something that's an opinion is a fact or vice versa. So Tim is making a very good
point
there.
That's a very good point, yeah.
I mean, just one thing about the this fact-opinion distinction, it's not Pew's fault. When I say there's a problem with the distinction, I think this distinction is made by so many people. It's taught in schools. I looked online at Rochester Elementary Schools. They have this fact-opinion sheet that you're supposed to learn as an elementary school student. On the BBC News website, there's similarly a place that explains exactly like they did this supposed fact opinion distinction. So I wouldn't say it's their fault. There wasn't a flaw in the study in that sense. There's a difficulty with this distinction. I think we should just replace this distinction, which is something that's very close to what I think people want to get at with it, which is the statement based on good evidence? Is there good reason, good informed reason to believe this is true, or is it not? And this goes to Tim's question. Yeah. For instance, when somebody says something plainly false, is it, you could just say, look, this is false. There's no good evidence to believe this, as opposed to just an opinion.
And Zainab, I can think of a number of discussions that actually kind of put me in a bind as a talk show host, because if I push back on a factual basis, I'm accused of biased or having an opinion. And one example is, if our top marginal tax rates were 98%, it would stifle growth and we would be in real trouble. So when you cut taxes when they're 90% or 95%, you're going to have growth because people are going to hold more of their own wealth. They're going to reinvest it into their companies, their jobs, their communities, et cetera. When top marginal tax rates are 39% and you cut them to 36%, it's not automatic that you're going to have growth. If your corporate tax rate goes from 35 to 20, it's possible that you're just going to have less revenue and what is that the growth is going to be kept by the executives and the people at the top of companies. I'm not really interested in it on an opinion level. I don't really care.
Right.
I care about what history has shown us what tax cuts do and don't do. So there are times where tax cuts stimulate growth. There are times where you get to a point where they do not, and they simply contribute to more of a deficit. But I'm often accused of having a bias then. So give me, as a philosophy professor, give me some tools the next time this comes up on the show to push back against that.
I mean, I think you just have to say, look, here's the evidence, and here's the claim. That
never works.
Really?
Whoa.
People don't want to hear that because they're really married to this idea.
Yeah, that's...
Well, they've been cultivated to this, right? To this way of thinking. So I think it's less of like what they don't want to hear and what still has to be said. And, it's like... It doesn't matter that you don't want to hear this. It doesn't matter that you want to feel this way. The evidence is X.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of nuance to a lot of public policy issues, but there are some facts that are facts. For example, there's a whole movement that the Flat Earth Society. There are people out there that still believe the Earth is flat. I raised that issue to my six-year-old grandson, and I said to him, what would you say to somebody who said the Earth is flat? And his response was, I'd tell them to buy a globe. So, from the mouth of babes, some things are just facts. Vaccinations work. The Earth is not flat. And so I think we might get overly concerned about the nuances of some of these issues. But there's so many people out there that will believe things that are patently false. And fake news has resulted into that. And that's one area of the Internet that's been very divisive on purpose by our enemies.
All right, Brad, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was doing some research last night before, and I typed in this topic in the internet, and the first thing that came up was comprehensive education or reading in, elementary school, middle school, high school, and college. And I think that has almost trained some of the people in this generation to either question or, want to dig deeper in analysis of a fact versus an opinion. So I think that plays into, this whole debate or topic on determining a fact or opinion.
Yeah, it's also like, if I could tap into just some of my time away, there were some things that I would get into conversation about. And it's so interesting because I felt that Europeans, for example, if I talked about like, hey, it's very hot or it's snowing, and they'd be like, climate change, almost always, almost always. If I say here, it's been unseasonably warm for the last 10 years in Rochester in October, they're like, yeah, it was just a good winter. Like, no, there's a reason for that. And it's like, this, obviously, this study was Americans only, right? After reading this, I thought, what if similar questions were asked around the world about, you know, in this kind of same vein, how would Americans line up, regardless of age, but also age, sure, against the rest of the world? And I think just overwhelmingly, opinion, but likely a fact, Americans are just underinformed and highly opinionated. So even in the face of facts, because there has been this huge agenda to make just knowing things that are true, like as fact, making it like demonizing it as you're just like, you want to be too smart. There's like this big agenda in this country and we don't really see ourselves outside of like how the world views us. And so it's, we get into this infighting of the left versus the right, but really on like the world stage, we all just kind of look like idiots. Like, it's really what it comes down to.
Zainab, you want to add that?
I mean, just maybe one more thing about humbleness. That's a tool that you could use when speaking to someone. So if you put forward something as, okay, this is evidence and this is conclusive, well, that's not true, right? These are really complicated issues, what exactly raising
Absolutely.
Taxes does. So if you phrase what you're saying as a more tentative thing, which it is, you know, because it's not a conclusive fact.
And a tax cut in 1986 would not necessarily have the same fundamentals as a tax cut in 2018, even if the rates are the same.
Yes.
And so show some humility and say, we can't be certain.
Yes, and so again, use the range of different attitudes that are available to you. You can have beliefs at various strengths. You can really strongly believe, I believe very strongly there's a microphone in front of me. I don't believe very strongly that, you know, increasing taxes will have this and that benefit. It's just, you know, we have many options available. We should just use them.
Now that's making me think of, I think it's Anthony Magnabosco's his name. He does something called street epistemology, where he asks people about their degree of certainty of their belief in a deity.
I was just going to say the religion's role in this,
he finds it so interesting because many people will say, 100%. I'm 100% certain that my God's right. And he said, really, that's interesting because I just talked to someone who's Buddhist and they're 100% certain that they're right.
Right.
Do you think that they're just wrong? And they're like, no. And he said, well, then can you be 100%? And it's interesting watching the wheels turn about what certainty is to people, because we all sort of want to think that we're certain about everything. But humility starts wearing us down.
I'm a big fan of that. I think we talked about television news's role in shaping this generation, the older generation. I think one thing we hadn't talked about, though, is religion's role in shaping that generation as well. And I was just reading something yesterday or this morning saying that the largest growing religious identity is none.
I think none, as in no thank you.
And I think like a big thing when I talk about, my family is super religious and I say, hey, you guys treat faith as assurance. Like, I believe this thing, therefore it's true. And belief doesn't always equate to fact or like reality or anything. But I think if we look at the older generation and their marriage to religion and everything that Walter Cronkite said was true and everything that their pastor said was true as well, I think all of these things kind of work towards the same endpoint. And then I think when you see the younger generation stepping away and saying like, yeah, no, that makes no sense, you know, I think we're able to discern a little bit better because of that same thing as well, actually sitting in these pews and hearing things and being like, yeah, no, I don't believe that. Or not just I don't believe that, that's just not true. You know, whereas our parents will say, well, you have to have faith, you know, you have to believe what God says and all these other things. And I think all of these things collectively get these two different cohorts being very wrong or very right.
All right, I've got to, Jim says I'm killing him. He says, Evan, you're killing me. You read 10 questions. I've got answered numbered 1 to 10 with an O or an F answer.
I did the same way.
All right, okay, so Jim, I'm going to do this in the actual answers. Number 1 was an O, opinion. Number 2 was an F, fact. 3, F. 4, and 5. And 6, O. 7, F, 8, O, 9, and 10, F. And I mixed it up for our panel in studio.
You got 100.
I got 100.
69 years old.
There you go. So there you go, Jim. And let me read a couple of quick comments from listeners. I've got a ton. We could have gone all day with this. It's amazing. And a number of people saying, by the way, thanks for the philosophical angle.
There you go.
We ought to do, I'm telling you, we ought to do philosophy one day a week here. But then after a week, no one's going to believe anything anymore.
That's not the idea. I know.
Zainab's going, you're missing the point. Tyler says, great discussion. I recently took a critical reasoning test that was administered quite similarly. Older members of the cohort tended to struggle more in determining opinions for statements that were politically charged, and I found that quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Linda, I'm going to read your email, Linda, not to endorse it, but just to share that people can change their mind. But she does offer a political angle. She writes the following. She says, for over a decade, I begged, cajoled, and lectured my now 90-year-old father to watch something other then Fox News. And finally, I wore him down, and he gave in. He began watching a few other news sources. I can report that for the first time in his life, he voted for a different party last Tuesday. His final gift to his progressive daughter. Thanks, Dad. that comes from Linda. So again, that's not meant to be a right or a left point, but what she's saying is much of what our panelists said. When you are very narrowly focused on the information and where it's coming from, you're going to start to believe your opinions are facts. Doubt is good. That's what I'm taking from this. Doubt is good. Humility is good.
And listen to NPR.
That's C-SPAN. That is a fact.
That's a fact.
That is a fact that everyone should be a member. Right. Thank you. I want to thank our entire panel for coming in here. And I think, honestly, I do try to leave this discussion more humble. And for those who are rolling their eyes at the host, I promise, we're all going to try. We're going to try that. Quinesha Anye, good luck in your travels. Thanks for coming in before you go to London. We appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
Brad Ford, Senior Equity Compensation Analyst at Constellation Brands. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to Ray Martino, lecturer in the School of Management at Nazareth College, former partner at Martino Flynn. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Zainab Soysol, who is an assistant professor of philosophy at the University of Rochester and really making us think this hour. Thank you
Thank
so much.
Thank you so much.
Our thanks to, who do I see behind the glass? We've had Rob Braden, we've had Juan Vazquez, but the truth is producer Megan Mack has worn all of the hats behind the glass today out of necessity and has done a great job. And that is not an opinion. It's a fact. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.